Welcome to Turn a Page, the official comic book club for Nerd Initiative. Each week, the NI Bullpen will be covering the world of comics, talking to creators, deep diving into some fantastic stories, and much more. Now let's hand it over to the team and turn a page.
And what is going on, everyone? It is Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you are tuned into the Nerd Initiative streaming service for another edition of Turn a Page, the official comic book club for Nerd Initiative. My name is Ken M. You know me as the host of the ODPH podcast, but also Nerd Initiative's comics editor-in-chief. To my left, your right, because of his contract, he has to do his own intro.
Coming at you live and direct, straight from a folding chair in the ODPH studios. My name is off-the-cuff Tom, Nerd Initiative's pop culture connoisseur, Ken, Matt, and why did I just blank right there? Because this is why we do it live. And Jason, always a pleasure.
Absolutely. And joining us, our other co-host, you know him as one half of the dynamic duo of Drafts and Dialogue, bringing you that pop culture knowledge you need to know each and every single week. And that is the only Matt Roth from Hops Geeks News. Matt, what is going on?
What's up, nerds? It is Tuesday night, so you know we have an excellent guest with us tonight who is doing some just amazing work. I am so excited to be here. And Jason, thanks for hopping on with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Let's talk comics.
Let's do it. When we're talking comics, and I gave the story a little behind the scenes back, behind the curtain here, if you will. Last year, we went to New York Comic Con, and we were fortunate enough to attend the Comixology Originals brunch put on by Amazon. Shout out to Superfan Promotions, amazing people there. And I happened to get into a conversation while some creators were there and bumped into one Chip Zdarsky. And I happened to go, like, one of my favorite series out right now is The All-Nighter. And he immediately said, you got to talk to Jason Lowe about this because he is amazing. This is a story. And he went on this amazing monologue praising our guest we have on the line today. You know his work from such books as Afterlift, Pitiful Human Lizard, Star Wars High Republic Adventures, Razor Blades, The Century. Yes, folks, if you know me, you know my disdain for the character, but this man wrote an incredible story about him, and he is one half of the team behind this amazing story from Comixology Originals, and it's out via print form by Dark Horse Comics. Please welcome to the show the one and only Jason Lowe. Jason, what is going on?
Oh, man. I'm so glad to be here. So happy to just talk about comics with you guys, especially since I've been battling with this massive cold for the past few days. So, you know, this is like the light at the end of the tunnel, just talking to you guys about comics. So, let's do this.
Absolutely. The story of The All-Nighter, which if anybody is not familiar with, why don't you break it down for our audience? This is one of my personal favorite ones I've read on Comixology and by Dark Horse. So yeah, let's break it down a little bit.
So yeah, The All-Nighter is about a found family of vampires that are in hiding from society. They're in hiding by running a late night diner and just getting by. But one of them decides to use his vampirism to be a superhero because he finds that there is a loophole to being here's the thing. In this world, a bunch of monsters are all in hiding, especially this found family of vampires. Our family's trying to keep it under wraps, but yeah, one decides to be a vampire. Decides to be a superhero, and when other monsters find this other loophole that this guy's doing, they're like, "Hey, like, I can still be a monster underneath a mask," and they follow suit, and hell breaks loose, and all these monsters are out in the world, dressed up as superheroes and supervillains.
Yeah, it's such an incredible tale. Like I say, when I first picked it up, I wasn't sure what to expect. I mean, I knew about vampires, and by the time we get to the end of that first issue, I'm like, whoa, okay, here we go. And just for where it starts from point A to where it's wrapped up at issue 15, and just the journey they go on, like, this is one of the most creative stories I think I've read in recent memory, to be honest with you, just the different twists and turns that this family goes through. I mean, going in the process, like, you know, was the story just kind of ever evolving, or did it kind of just stay on like one certain path, or was like when you started going, it's like, oh, this idea sounds really cool, like, let me go this direction?
Yeah, well, so after me and Chip worked on Afterlift, and by that time, like, yeah, we it was already published and it won an Eisner Award, And we were like, all right, let's meet up for a little celebratory dinner and talk about our next project. And that's when we jotted down like a bunch of ideas. And one of my ideas was like, let's talk about like, yeah, this found family of vampires that run a late night diner, and just talk about like just their normal lives, just trying to get by in a world. And I told Chip about this, about like, you know, like after like telling a story like Afterlift, which has this very universal message, universal theme that anyone can pick up and read, and you know, I said let's do something that doesn't involve superheroes. Like, I know you're busy with Daredevil and Batman, but let's make this our own little baby, where we tell this very dramatic tale about these vampires from different histories, different generations too. And he went with that. And then he wrote this outline, the series outline. And then he got back to me with like this 5-issue outline, and it included superheroes.
So naturally, let's stop talking about superheroes. So naturally, we are going back to superheroes.
We're going back.
And this was even before I got hired by Marvel, because I was like, I thought I was at that stage where I was just done with superheroes. Like after working on Pitiful Human Lizard, which is this very offbeat comedic superhero series that I did, that was like my series of everything I wanted to do in a superhero comic that was told in 5 years, 22 issues that I wrote and drew. And I was like, yeah, I'm done with superheroes. And All Nighter, I wanted that to, you know, steer away from that. But Chip brought me back into loving superheroes, and it actually like made it much more interesting, because it actually added more layers to these characters, because not only were these like vampires people that were hiding from society by running a late night diner, but you know, one of them or some of them, eventually later on all of them decide to wear masks and costumes, and it's like layers upon layers and layers. And it was like a lot to think about of how to design costumes for each of these characters, like knowing where they're coming from. I got to thank Chip for making me love to tell superhero stories. And here I am, just in the middle, like just balancing three different projects with Marvel right now.
That's incredible.
So you've really you've covered the fact that you reuniting Chip for the series. One thing that I do, you're talking about layers and layers and layers. Ken knows very, very, very well my background. We need more diner, less superheroes, more diner. I just want more diner. I want all the drama. Like, you know, here's your 50-cent cup of coffee, and where's my tip? You know, Sin just got a little bit in that first issue. Just saying. We can get more drama in the diner. But yeah. I do love the fact that it was, you guys were smart enough to use the fact of your meat purveyor was also your supplier for the blood. That I found as a restaurant guru, I thought that was just a great way to put it in.
Yeah, we were thinking about like what stuff we can put on like in the diner menu. Like I even like thought like they could probably make some pho, right? Like some pho with some like the blood.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Ooh.
Cubes that you do is like that. That's genius. Like they serve that in pho restaurants. Like do that at this diner, and like they would have like this interesting menu where they can like have their own takes. And one of the early steps I did was making blueprints of the diner and the different levels, the different floors, the apartments, to make sure that I got all the angles right of, you know, of dramatizing these characters.
Oh, what a great idea. Sides. I like that.
I like that idea a lot.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
We're talking about vampires, man. And everything I've learned about vampires has come from my co-host Lauren's love of Supernatural, the TV show, against my will or watching it. And then, of course, Blade. So kind of what went into your vision of creating these these different, like, these are vampires kind of like we've never really seen vampires before. What went into creating these characters and giving them layers and just like personality?
I mean, okay, what was, there was that Swedish film, the name escapes me. I think it's called Let Her In or Let Me In.
I know what you're talking about. Yes, yes. I've seen this on like Shudder or something a while ago. I know what you're talking about.
About this kid vampire.
Letting the right one.
And this loner kid, a loner kid who invites this vampire kid into his home and to become friends. And then it becomes this whirlwind drama. I love like how serious and deadpan it can be with that. Especially when it comes to the gruesome bits. So that's like one of the things I try to capture. But, you know, like when it comes to these characters, you know, we both dive down to their history when they became a vampire. Like Joy, she was a vampire when she became a vampire in the 80s, and she became a vampire at the age of 9, 10-ish. Alex, who became a vampire in, I guess, the early 2000s-ish. And you know, like, just thinking about, like, what their interests were of that time. Like, Joy's fashion sense was very retro. Like, her hoodie, like, her tracksuit was very 80s-inspired, like, 80s windbreaker. Looks, that's what I was trying to go for. And you know, like,
were you trying to do members only? Give me the old members only on there.
The members only, what?
it was a line of windbreakers jackets from back then.
Way back when.
I'm just showing me.
Okay, oh shoot. I guess I was like just too young to, like, I'm an 80s kid, but I was too young to like know the brands myself. Yeah, Alex, he had like the game systems of his generation in his room, like a PS2 and a GameCube was one of them. I think I drew. Yeah.
See, I'm a product. I grew up through the 90s, so like all the PS2, man, many friendships were won and lost on the GameCube, the Dreamcast, the PS2, the PS1, many times.
Cynthia, she was an 80s businesswoman, like a working woman type of thinking like the power suits now, but like since she is in hiding, like thinking of like a more relaxed look, like sneakers for sure. Because she's very active person, just like she's this go-getter, just like she was as a businesswoman, and that's what she is at the diner. Like, that's her attitude when she's serving to customers.
Yeah, like it plays in. Oh, sorry, go about.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, that plays into like the eras of everybody. So you kind of got to play around a little bit with each era. Did you find that little aspect of it a little bit fun and also kind of rejuvenating because you got to just pull from so many different angles?
Oh, for sure. I come from this background of, so I used to be apprentice of Larry Hama, and he, like his, like one of his mantras is like, to tell a good story, you need strong characters. And he's the guy that wrote all the file cards for one over 200 G.I. Joes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you dive into every character's history, it's just so easy to tell a story that way. And it's so thrilling when you have like these two characters with different histories interact with each other and then see what part of their history or their interests that would slip in a natural conversation. I like that thrill of telling a story. It makes it more organic and natural and less forced.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, you can definitely tell through all the characters too. And I think probably the one that, at least for me, stood out as having the most character change from point A to point B was Francis during this entire story. You want to talk about maybe just like how your approach to him, and obviously we are talking a little bit of spoilers of the book too, him being Frankenstein's monster, and then he turns out just to go through this metamorphosis as we start to finish.
Yeah, that was mostly Chip's idea, actually. I thought it was just an interesting concept of how he goes from being a, you know, Frankenstein's monster to the CEO of a company who has this wealth to cosmetically make him more refined, a much more gentle, very handsome giant man. That was just a very interesting thing to draw. It's like having the presence of a god, like walking into a diner. Like that was Francis, because like he was 7 feet tall and he's a living legend, and you would not know it by the scars. Actually, like we had to like add that little detail, like adding like some slight scars to his wrists whenever he pulls his sleeves, because just to show like that is Frankenstein's monster, like that, like those are the markings that he has not surgically recovered from. Mm-hmm. Like he's left that as a reminder of who, of the monster that he still is.
Yeah. Like he's just somebody that you see just his growth in character, and especially too, like when you first introduce him, when he comes to the diner, investigating, obviously when a superhero is running through the city and, you know, drawing the attention of the takers, just to see him come in for that scene too. And especially this history with Cynthia, it makes for a powerful moment. And as you see just the growth of his character, like I think for me, he's just the one that really stood out the most, just from having, you know, the history with Cynthia to where everything ends up in his story too. Like I think it's just something that adds to the, you know, another layer to the mythos, and especially with how many mythos you borrow from in the story. Like I say, it ranges all over the place, and it's so creative of how it's done. Was there any myth that you wanted to do in the story and just couldn't pull off?
Chupacabra.
Oh, I'm trying to remember, because I know I drew like a bunch of different cryptids. Like there was definitely like one was a giant spider, like like a man spider-esque type of beast, and that was in one of my early concept drawings. But I don't know. The thing was, we managed to fit every character in, and especially when it came to like the very last few chapters, like all the monsters that we forgot, like we managed to fit them all in, like the big diner fight scene, or
yes,
or near the very end of that black void. So yeah, like I'm pretty happy and content that we got to. Oh, you know what? That reminds me that I have left some clues throughout most of the issues. Of a black cat. And if you go back to watch, like looking at all the issues, I've left a black cat that wanders around, that is surveying things. And the cat would be in certain scenes strategically, because I wanted to fit in a witch, because that would have been like one of the last things.
That's something that seems kind of familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boo. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm here all week. Try the fish.
Yeah. No, but that's something I remember seeing a couple of panels, but I'm going to be doing a deep dive read about this again too. But yeah, just with, and especially too, how everybody just fits into with the characters. Like that's the thing. Like nothing ever felt like really forced. It had this very organic flow, especially when you get right to the very end and you talk about the big battle there, where just, you know, when we start coming through, I'm sorry, I'm reading the chat there, where the guy in the chair is voiced in about booing Tom. It's one of those situations where like everything just flows so well, and it's just such a creative, you know, breath of fresh air too. Because when you think something wouldn't be pulled off, it comes off flawlessly. Like especially when you introduce God and Lucifer into the story, and how you introduce God when we first see him and he's making Slurpees or milkshakes, yeah, rather. Like that was brilliant. I'm sorry. Like I laughed out loud. I'm like, wait, what? And sure enough, he's like, hey, you want to, I'm making milkshakes. One of my best things.
That was definitely one of Chip's surprises. And yeah, like it's crazy. When I would get a script and then I would want to, I'm so tempted to tweet like, oh my God, I get to draw God. Yeah. But that would be like 5 months way in advance before anyone knows what I'm talking about. So like, yeah, I just had to just keep my mouth shut. But yeah, like I just can't believe like some of the things that like that Chip got me to draw and that we just had a lot of fun and get away with it too. Pretty happy how it turned out.
Oh, absolutely. Like it's brilliant.
Now, looking back on the series, was there a particular favorite moment or unfavorite moment that, you know, that was, you know, you loved to create, or you just had such a mental block that you were just, you had to push through it and you made something wonderful?
You know, there was this one issue. I think it might have been, it's definitely in volume 3. And it had to be the issue where half of the scenes took place in this astral plane, this very space environment. And at that time, I was working on 5 projects for Marvel.
Holy cow.
And Chip and Allison knew this. So Chip kind of like made it easy for me by going like, okay, so like some of it's going to take place. Well, most of it's going to take place in space now. And I was like, all right, that's awesome. I think that issue only took me about like 2-3 weeks to pencil and ink. So I can just move on with my next job. But I was pretty happy how I laid out like the space scenes, because I did put a lot of care into that, like dotting every little star in the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. and Paris's color, our colors, Paris, his colors just made it so much more beautiful, looking at those scenes, like creating the right cold dark mood between God and the taker.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty happy how that turned out for the situation that I found myself in.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant thing too. Like I say, that whole sequence that I'm just remembering now as you're talking about it. Yeah, I mean, that's just one that stands out too, and especially just with how many different elements are in this story. Like I say, this is such a multi-layered story that there's literally something in it for everybody.
Well, you know what, there was another scene I'm remembering. The scenes with Joy and her mother, and Joy and her sister, that really got deep. That's the emotion. That's the emotional story like I wanted out of the All Nighter, and I'm glad that like that Chip brought it there. Because I love to try to capture just the right emotions for those scenes, and yeah, like Chip has said like I could like make any scene with just two characters talking very interesting, and me, it's like these are characters acting, like they're working hard to get their Oscar right here, like I really played with the emotions and also like getting the right background, the right setting for Joy's mom, who has dementia, like what kind of clutter she would have, like all the stuff that she's hoarded from the past that she's collected of her daughter, like all that, like in the hallway and all crowded in their living room and the kitchen. I paid a lot of attention to, and that's one of my favorite scenes of the series for sure.
Yeah, it's such a powerful scene too. Like I say, with Joy reuniting with her family there, and just the emotions that you put in those characters too. Like it's one that it really connects with the readers, and it's really one that it's powerful. And you think about just for where the story goes, dealing with superheroes, it grounds it so heavily that you're just like, you take a step back, and then it's just like, whoa! And it's brilliant work.
Thank you.
Yeah, it also goes to show about the whole.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Go ahead, Matt. You haven't said anything in a while. Go for it.
No, I was just going to say, like, I like the less is more approach almost, because yeah, it may be two characters talking, but the way you convey the emotions like that, that to me is the true testament of power and abilities. And that's really where, you know, you get to show off your talents, and it's harder to do versus like an action sequence. So those panels where there's just like the two, the three characters just really getting in depth, to me, those are always going to be my favorite panels, because there's just a lot of love and detail and just attention poured to them.
And that's, I got to give a shout out to Larry Hama, because I remember one of my early works I showed to him like, oh, maybe two decades ago, or, and you know, he would look at this panel, the scene of two characters talking. It's like, and he would compare it to a puppet show, because you only see talking heads, and it's like, and then he introduced me to like some great films that I should watch, and definitely like one of the most Kurosawa and some Sergio Leone and like all the classics, and just paid attention and to like all the classical films. And this was like me in my early 20s coming out of art school and opening my eyes and being like, yeah, like this is like, these are like great shots of like of how to tell like the right moods in a conversation. Just paying attention to like the right kind of shots, like when to use them to tell the right notes in a conversation.
Well, just in that whole scene and everything that you had in Joy's mom's house, the composition as a whole was so brilliantly done. And the fact that, you know, I love that it was just so harmonious, that, you know, what you and Chip did, just bringing it together with the whole idea of the dementia. And, you know, it also goes to show the softer side of vampirism, how it affects characters. I mean, I love the fact they say, oh, I've got superpowers, when it's, mom, I miss you. It's literally, mom, I miss you. And it's just lucky that, oh, mom doesn't remember that, you know, you left for cigarettes, you know, or left for milk, you know, 20 years ago. Sorry, Dad.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the hearts of the story, for sure.
Now, but go ahead. Finish that thought, Tom, please.
Oh, no, I was going to say, again, it's just, it goes to show that, you know, vampires are not always just that big old, you know, they are people.
Exactly. It's like it's like the mutant metaphor, right? Mm. Like and like some of the great X-Men comics are the ones where like you have these heart to heart moments. Just like you step back from the action and you talk about like the reason why they're fighting, or the reason why they're fighting just to exist. It's the same with the vampires, like trying to fight to exist in our world. And some of them like go through like so many different struggles. And I wish we were able to explore a bit more of like Alex's past. Like I think there was more that we could have explored if we continued on.
Oh yeah. Kind of talking about, you mentioned you've worked on like five or six different projects. We know you've done work with Marvel in different mediums. Now, is there any sort of different strategy approaching something such as Comixology, where it's primarily digital? Of course, this is going to come to print through Dark Horse. However, Comixology Weekly, it's digital. You know, is there any sort of different marketing strategy coming from your standpoint at all versus something like Marvel that's print?
Well, in terms of like the drawing format, like they do give you this page guidelines of do unless of characters popping out of a panel, like everything must be contained in their own rectangle. And so, you know, we looked at it as more of like, okay, so every box is going to be very cinematic, either like narrow, wide letterbox panels or just square panels, you know, kind of like the, you know, like it's something I aspire to, is like the nine panel grid of Watchmen.
Right.
You know,
everything's like, more like formulaic versus, right.
Yeah. Like everything has every panel has a beat, but like nothing can spill to the next panel. It was also like, one of the things we had to try to avoid doing was like two page spreads or even a one-page spread. Like, a one-page spread, we kind of had to, like, make sure we got an approval for. But, yeah, that was the only restrictions, really. It made things a bit more easier for me because it's like, all right, if you just have things more contained in this panel, like, I'm just going to focus on that one panel, not worry about the whole page composition. Yeah.
That makes a lot. I would have been like, wow, that seems like it's harder because it almost feels like you're being boxed in a little more. But that's interesting that to you it's more freeing because less to worry about at the time. Like, that's a very interesting approach.
Yeah, I'm just working one panel at a time. Like, I'm done this one panel, I'm going to move on to the next. And yeah, that's it. And that's, I reached the end.
Well, it's a difference from going like this. Wait, where's the camera over here? Going this to this, you know?
Right.
So it doesn't, and I read, I'll be honest, I read most of my stuff digitally nowadays because my wife would kill me if I had all this, that, you know, the paper at home. So right. It really was a transition when I came to start doing the show. It's like, okay. Yeah. Okay. So do I do this big? Do I do it? So I've lucked out and found an old iPad that's just about the same size as a comic book page. So I'm like, okay, I can do this now. But still, it's
now Marvel Infinity. Marvel Infinity Comics. That was a learning lesson for me. Like, I was because that's like the vertical scroll, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing about that format is, like they give you a template that is like, imagine it's like three of these of the smart phone screens down, and that would just be one page, and you would try to fit like six panels in that, or maybe like one long
vertical panel. You can't draw, that sounds impossible.
Yeah, that's that sounds wild.
All I'm thinking is Spider-Man.
Oh my gosh, I'm getting so much anxiety thinking about this.
But my first story was Lucky the Pizza Dog, and this was like the first year where they introduced Marvel Infinity Comics. So they were still figuring things out. And I was figuring things out because the thing was, like, I was not sure if I was drawing things big enough, which I wasn't.
Luckily he gets to miss an eye doing Lucky. So it's one less thing he's got to draw.
Yeah. So I'd find myself like either like drawing things a bit too small or drawing things a bit too big. And then when it came to like writing things, like writing speech bubbles, like I was making sure, because like the first comic I saw that had like the word balloons, I was like, oh shoot, like some of these, like these type size, the sizes of the fonts are huge. So I had to just write less. don't like think about like very detailed paragraphs where character goes on. So it's like just get to the point of what this character is going to say in six words, and that will take up like this much space on your smart screen phone.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fascinating. Yeah, like I never really think about that, especially like now that started taking off with Marvel too, the Infinity line on Marvel Unlimited as well. And then, I mean, speaking of Marvel too, you are the writer of a character that I never really got into. I gotta admit,
Ken's favorite hero.
I love
hero.
The take
you
that you did. Well, I know it's in my trinity of, like, you know, if they ever got, you know, Infinity snapped again, I would not be shedding a tear, and that's Bob Reynolds of the Century. But you wrote a fantastic superhero story there, and the All-Nighter turned into a superhero story. What do you think brings out the best of characters to make them a great superhero?
I think it's all about just the compassion and empathy for others. Taking that extra effort to help one another. That makes one a superhero. I think that's the main bottom line. And I think, you know, you see a lot of that with Superman. I think that's one of the things that we admire about Superman. That he is able to, you know, aside from like punching bad guys and you know, like and fighting like some of the big bad aliens, like he like taking those small moments where he's saving the girl that's thinking about jumping and prevents her from doing that, and just makes them think about, you know, like just showing patience and being able to understand where people are coming from. So yeah.
No, absolutely. Because I mean, you see just so many different variations, especially like from where the early days of like the idea of the superhero is now to where you go with, you know, stories like Invincible or Radiant Black, and just how everything kind of goes into different areas with that. And especially too with what you did in the Sentry. And I don't want to go spoil too much away because issue 4 just came out, which wraps that up. And it's a phenomenal read too, by the way. And just to kind of see like where the evolution of superheroes is, because this is what inspires Alex to take his journey up. And especially it falls back on that old saying, with great power comes great responsibility. But this is where he becomes very irresponsible with his powers.
Yeah. Like, back to like, yeah, like the Sentry, like these are characters that never aspire to be superheroes. These are just ordinary people, like people that we would just, like everyday people that we would see on the street, in our commute, at work, etc. They're just trying to get by. And then, like, you know, the what if, like, what if you, that's just a random person, is chosen to get these incredible powers of like 1 million exploding suns? Like, what would you do with them? But at the same time, like, can you handle them as well? And, you know, like, most of them, they don't, because it's, you know, like the thing about like the Sentry character is that like a lot of accidents and catastrophes happen because he's just not able to control his powers. And you know, the same goes with just an ordinary person who has trouble getting by, and then now they have to deal with these powers. Like that's another obstacle that they have to go through. So that was something that I had to like play around with. Like, I thought it was just kind of interesting to retell that kind of Sentry story.
Yeah. Like it's one thing that jumps out, because you think about, you know, in Sentry is kind of the idea of Superman, but it's basically what happens if Superman gets grounded to Earth. I mean, that's the way I took it when I was reading this story. And especially with how it ends up, like, I'm more excited to hear about that character's progression as we go forward. Like, that's just how fantastic this story was. Because, like I say, I don't relate to the Sentry. And I know in the chat they have my ultimate top three that could get snapped away. I'm perfectly fine with that. But it's just one of those things that now seeing this fresh take on it, you know, now this goes to show, like, you know, the hero has evolved from what we originally thought.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember when I first got the gig, and I was asking like some of my comic friends like about their love for the Sentry, and or even just random fans, like yeah, there are people that really love the Sentry, which is like a small amount, and then there are people that are like just casual, like, oh yeah, like Sentry is there, like I know he was in some of the events, like, you know, like he was in Civil War, or he was in Secret Invasion or whatever, but like, or World War Hulk, but like he was not like a character that like everyone fell in love with, because like he was a character that had like he was like very unhinged, like he very unpredictable, a loose cannon at times, but like, yeah, but when you really get to know him, like, you understand like the reason why he's like that, like because of his mental condition that he's in, which not many people know. And I thought, if I'm going to tell this story, and like my assignment was never to bring Bob Reynolds back. It's funny, because like, well, when the announcement came that I was writing the new Sentry, like a lot of the Sentry fans added me, going like, I hope you bring him back. Like, you better bring him back. And it was like, sorry guys, like, this is not part of my assignment. My assignment was to introduce a brand new Sentry, but I'm gonna like tell a story that everyone, I'm hoping that everyone can enjoy, especially people that are not fans of the Sentry, and hopefully Sentry fans can give a chance and see the similarities with a new Sentry, with an individual that's going through her own struggles of which is CP, which is something completely different Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, yeah, like introducing brand new characters and having them get an idea of their daily lives before you flip the switch, and then their lives light speed into the Marvelverse as they become these centuries.
Yeah. Like I say, the story, like, it won me over. So I'm excited to see more of that character now in the future. But I mean, obviously with the All-Nighter, I know Tom's got a question lined up.
Oh, I mean, well, yeah. Speaking out, you know, wanting more of characters, like, seriously, are we going to go back to the diner for a second helping?
Not at the moment.
Can I get one to go? Or a drive-through version or something? DoorDash me something. Let's go.
Like right now, like, we're pretty cool right now that we were able to start and finish the series together. And the thing was, like right now, like, me and Chip, we're just working on completely different work schedules and just want to focus on what's on our plates right now. And he knows, like right now, I just want to just focus on just, I guess, making a name for myself in Marvel right now, with just trying to give myself a good proving record.
You are doing that.
Yeah.
Not trying. You are.
Well, just wait. Hopefully it still stands. And I hope it does with the stuff I'm working on. Especially with, Werewolf by Night. That's coming out in the summer as part of the Blood Hunt summer event. So there's a lot of
all the way.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah. But yeah, no, like back to like what's stopping us from working on the next arc is we're just taking a break for now. We're not saying this is the end, but like we're happy that it's wrapped up, but we have left some like a little bit of an opening.
What you're saying is there's leftovers.
Possibly. No. Possibly.
I'm just making all the food jokes tonight.
What we're saying is he has to finish story.
Oh my gosh. You're going there.
Yes, we have to.
Yes, we have to go there. You mentioned before the show, we talked a little wrestling. We got to know, what are your WrestleMania predictions? Oh, I'm out.
I think we're definitely going to see Cody and Seth winning the tag team match, just so we can go to night two. But you know, I wouldn't be surprised that WWE would want Roman to continue on carrying the belt for as long as possible, just for the records. And Cody, like, you know, his time will probably come again in 5 years. Maybe and that's when we'll celebrate because I think there's still some more years in him, but gosh, like right now, but with all the things that they've done with Cody, like you gotta give him that moment though, right? Like you like,
yeah,
I'm torn. Like, you know, Roman almost doesn't seem like it's right yet to take the strap off of him because he's so just like the way his status, right? Like the records, I feel he's meant to break these records. And so it doesn't feel like the right moment. But then again, it's like, what do you do with Cody if he doesn't win again? Because it almost seems like it is the right time for Cody. So like, it's a good problem to have, I guess, for WWE, but I'm with you. I'm very torn on either Rock's going to cost Roman the belt or like something there is going to happen to where Roman retains.
I was just thinking of something. I actually have a wrestling one because of where it's at. All right, what's the over under on pictures taken at Pat's or Geno's for their social medias? Like, can we take a bet there?
Oh, because WrestleMania is in Philadelphia.
That's right.
At the legendary cheesesteak places. Yeah.
The lousy legendary cheesesteak places. Just saying.
Oh, I did not know about that one.
The thoughts, views, and opinions of food places by Tom are not represented by Nerd Initiative.
Tom's our spinoff show. Welcome to Nerd Initiative's Food Network channel.
Hey man, I got the bona fides for it, just saying.
It's true.
One, that's all I know about wrestling. So yeah. Anyway,
I was gonna say, do you have a current favorite wrestler on the roster right now?
The thing is, I'm more of an AEW fan, and I'm thrilled to see my wrestling god Okada joining their ranks, and I love what you're doing with him and the new Elite. And I'm excited, actually, because tomorrow they're going to be in town in Toronto.
Are you going?
I get to see Okada live against Eddie Kingston, another wrestling god. It's going to be a great night. Mercedes Moné, she's going to be there.
Yes.
She's advertised to do some talking. So, yeah, we'll see. I hope she throws in a match. I hope she does a little squash match.
I think she's got to start wrestling unless they're holding her off till Dynasty, the new pay-per-view. But I think, but that Toronto show, I mean, especially Adam Copeland and Christian Cage, the I Quit match.
Oh, man.
Like, that's going to be out of control.
I can't wait, man. It's weird because, like, it feels like we've seen so much between that feud, Christian and Edge, Adam.
Oh, we say it all the time on Wrestling Night.
I mean, Adam and Christian. I can't keep track. I was there live in Toronto when Christian turned on Edge and like he hit him with the cup, and then he had his first like floor tantrum where he was like on the floor just banging.
Oh my god!
And I was like, what am I seeing here? This is crazy. And I love it. If he should do more of that, which he did. Man, Christian is just a great character.
Oh yeah, his heel work right now is top level.
I can't wait. That's tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Yeah, nice. My buddy Okada.
Nice. Awesome. Well, that's a perfect way to cap off New Comic Book Day, where everybody that is hearing this episode or watching it on YouTube needs to make sure they run out to the comic shops, go get the All-Nighter Volumes 1 and 2 via Dark Horse Comics, and then hit up Comixology Originals and get Volume 3, because you don't want to wait till it comes out in print form, but buy it when it does come out. And definitely, Jason, what else should we be looking forward to? You said Werewolf by Night, but anything else you can kind of tip us off of what to expect for the rest of the year?
Definitely in April. It will be the big Marvel Pets crossover, Infinity Paws.
Yeah!
All your favorite Marvel Pets, all in one, in this 10-parter saga.
Nope, not enough. I need more. I need more already.
It looks so gorgeous. My cat's actually in it. My cat, Boris, he's the inspiration of Cole, who is the Ghost Rider cat, and you get to see him as the spirit cat of vengeance, and he looks so freaking badass.
That's my gosh. Awesome.
You're gonna see him in flames.
Infinity Paws is my number one from NYCC. I don't, you know, I love Ghost Machine and everything, but as soon as I heard Infinity Paws, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
I hope to see it in someday.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that, and just stay tuned for some announcements in the coming next month or so, because there's definitely more down the pipeline. Some very exciting stuff. Just follow my socials. Just go to Jason Lowe Makes Comics at Instagram.
Excellent. And that is in the liner notes of this show, so we definitely will be keeping an eye on that and everything else you have coming out. And like I say, I can't stress enough, make sure you go pick up the All-Nighter, either in print or in digital form. Go check out the Century. Yes, I am endorsing the Century comic, which, like I say, Jason did an amazing story for that. And when Werewolf by Night comes out, we definitely have to catch back up with you here on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time out to talk with us today.
Thank you. Pleasure talking with you guys. This is awesome.
Absolutely, fun, man. Thank you so much. For Matt, Tom, my name is Ken M. Thank you, as always, for checking out Turn a Page. And we'll end it like we always do. When you're at the comic shop and you have a great issue in your hands, such as The All-Nighter, Volumes 1 or 2 by Dark Horse Comics, and you happen to see somebody struggling to find something at the shop to pick up, hand yours off to them. Tell them to turn a page. We'll see you next time.
Such waste of time, swiping left and swiping right on people you could know. 'Cause anyone who's worth a damn be worth way more than a picture could ever show. You could find the right light, find the right angle, and never find your soul. And it can feel like a losing battle, and this plot is full of holes. This modern way of finding love just makes me feel so alone. And I can't be the only one sick of staring at my phone. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me. We don't have to float alone on the open sea. Don't know that I believe in the old time fable. Everyone has just one true love. All I know is you're across this table, and you're all I'm thinking of. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me. We don't have to float alone on the open sea. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Talk to me. Swiping left and swiping right on people you could know.